Welcome to the UP Notable Books Club, brought to you by the Upper Peninsula Publisher and Authors Association. Matt Hillman is an award-winning author who is educated as an electrical engineer, but has worked most of his life in law enforcement, probably because those two things go together like peanut butter and jelly. Always a fan of good writing, he is studying the craft and moving toward a retirement gig as an author. He enjoys the freedom of fiction and the ability to employ his creative mind in the horror genre. Matt lives with his wife and three great kids in Michigan's beautiful Upper Peninsula.
So, hello, everybody. I just want you to know that I've been a little bit out of commission here. The long story is about a week and a half ago, I was going to see my dad to bring him Sunday dinner because he didn't want to go out of the house because it was a windy day. And that wind knocked over a big tree, but it wasn't that big. I mean, I should have been able to move it. And I was moving it until the branch I was moving broke. And I went flying in the air. And that's where I blacked out. And I woke up in the ditch in a lot of pain, which I've been in ever since. So what I did to myself was I shattered my radial bone. And I had surgery last week, and I believe I am now the owner of a titanium plate and 9 screws. So I've been behind on my UP notable correspondence. And Larry, you might be ahead on checks because in January we were supposed to meet with Matt, and we couldn't because we had technical difficulties. So I think I'm a little bit ahead on money from you. If you'd want to not give me some money for a while, that's great. Don't always hear that from people. And Jennifer will be getting her check. And then Matt, be sure to send me your physical mailing address so I can send you your money tomorrow as well. And this is the part of our program where I turn it over to Victor, co-sponsor, the UPA president. Victor, what can you tell us today?
Thanks, Evelyn. Right now, we're all about the spring conference. So mark your calendars for May 18th, 2024. We'll be at the Peter White Library, a beautiful old library in downtown Marquette. And anyone who's an author or who's writing, even if you're just thinking about writing, you should join us for the spring conference in Marquette on May 18th. We have a lot of great speakers, whether you're writing in the area of children's books, or whether you're writing about romance or suspense. We've got something for everybody, and even for people that are stuck with a little bit of a writer's block, we have breakout sessions for that. And it's also happening concurrently with the first ever Young Writer Storytelling Workshop. I wish I could plug that, but we're sold out. Every single seat, we have 25 kids coming, including 4 from Crystal Falls, right?
Yep.
So head on over to uppaa.org and click on Spring Conference. That's uppaa.org. And there's lots of, you can join us as a member, there's lots of benefits. And but that's all I'll say for now.
One benefit, if you go to that conference, we can meet in the flesh instead of on Zoom. Because I will be there. I'm driving over 4 of our high school kids. And I'll probably be, you know, kind of looking in on them and also coming to some of these adult workshops. It's pretty exciting. We've got one of our youth here in Crystal Falls just wrote his first book. So he's going to be one of the kids I'm taking over. So it's going to be a great day, May 18th. So I look forward to coming and reconnecting with people. I've never met Victor in person. I've met Larry in person once. So it's gonna be a nice day. And Anne Dahlman, I see that she's on, and I'm editing, but like you maybe heard, I've been a little under the weather, so I'm kind of helping her with her newest book, her newest Katie book. But I am not been the best behind.
Are you okay now?
Well, I'm getting there.
Take care of yourself.
I will be getting your manuscripts, because she sends me a chapter, and I send it back, and I don't know. We always have fun. So anyways, that's all for Victor. Next month, if you don't have it yet, please pick up a copy from your local library or bookseller, Odin's Eye by Tyler Tischler. And we will be meeting, as always, on the second Thursday of the month. It is a longer book, 46 pages, so you may want to start soon. And without any further ado, I would like to welcome Matt Hellman. We've got five of us here in Crystal Falls.
Watching.
A whole bunch of other people. So we would love to, we've been in suspense to talk about the bitter cold here on the warmest winter I've ever seen. Michigan. So take it away, Matt.
All right. Well, first, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate your interest in the book. And this is a fun opportunity to talk about it. And I know that horror tends to be, first of all, can you hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know that horror is generally a genre that's not widely sought after by readers, but it's one that allows me to do a lot of creating, a lot of world creating. And I try not to be too gory when I write. I will have a little bit, but I try not to be, over the top with it if I can help it. In writing, you just want to, if it moves the story forward, go with it. And that's kind of what I've tried to do. But when I was coming up with that particular novel, I wanted to do a crucible story, something where your heroes and characters are stuck in a crucible that they can't escape and have to deal with whatever situation arises. And of course, in the Upper Peninsula, a big snowstorm can create that. And what can make it even tougher is if you're at the tip of the Keweenaw Peninsula. So that was, that helped me create the setting for the biting cold. Then I wanted to, because I'd been up there, I saw the petroglyph of the, there's a bear petroglyph and the Viking ship petroglyph and so forth. And that just kind of sparked, curiosity more than anything, if that is real, why is it there, blah, blah, blah. And of course, as a writer, you kind of always say, what if, what if that was there as for some other reason other than, leaving a message, a short little, hey, we were here or what have you. So that's how I started to wrap some of this stuff together. And when I put together my stories, I like to take facts and weave them in to my novel. And that's what I did with this one. I did that with my first one, the Solomon Seal, which was actually set in New York. I was living in New York when I wrote that, upstate New York, but the story got set in New York City for the most part. But I like to take historical facts and kind of weave them into the story. And that was something I did with The Biting Cold and with Fort Wilkins up there. And when that was founded, with the ceding of the territory from the Ojibwe to the United States government, weaving things like that. Now, the last time we were on and I couldn't talk, I could talk, you just couldn't hear me. The question came up about the village disappearing, and was that based in fact? And that the concept is absolutely based in fact. There was an Inuit village up in Canada, right next to a lake, and I think it was around 1930. In the middle of winter, a trapper arrived there who had went there and traded frequently. And when he arrived in the village, there was no one there. I mean, literally nobody there. Oh yeah, here, let me just slide that down a little further. Here, how's that? That'll be stable. So he arrives in this village and there's no one there. Some of the tables are set as though people were going to eat. And he couldn't find hide nor hair of anyone. And it's a mystery to this day. No one knows what happened to them. So I took that and applied it to Copper Harbor. And that was what created the backstory for why my characters were searching out on the lake once they had found evidence of a possible person from that era. They went out there looking to see if they could discover what had happened. Possibly the village had gone out on the ice and gone through, and that was, you know, that was what happened in the story, but they weren't fully aware of that. And of course they didn't know why they would have gone out on the ice. The whole the whole community going out on the ice didn't make sense to them. So that is kind of set the background for the story. But then of course having characters is important. Some of the best books I've read, it's all been about characters. And so I really tried to make some unique characters in this novel and had to have the conflict. So everywhere you turn, I tried to have some sort of conflict between Brandon and his father, Bill, because of a misunderstanding that was fed to Brandon. The conflict between Bill and Jeff Jansen, the entrepreneur who wrote programs for the telephone and made money that way. So tried to weave that in there, but ultimately my favorite character really in the story was Trillium. Trill. She was essentially, if you will, the Uber hippie. And she, I even within her character though, I wanted some of the characteristics that you see up in the UP, the folks who care about the environment, yet they're not against hunting. That's part of taking care of the environment. I wanted to wrap that all up into Trillium's character and make her kind of tough but compassionate. And her character brought me a lot of joy writing. I kind of based her in some degree on my niece. But she was fun. And of course, with Brandon, the young man, the 15-year-old, how do you write a 15-year-old nowadays without them being addicted to video games and looking at their phone, and everything is online, 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 and the great outdoors holds no interest to them unless they're introduced to it. So once I got the characters put together, weaving this story was certainly entertaining, but I had to have kind of a slow build up with the kind of sinkhole that ultimately dropped down into the cave where the giant was essentially reverse hibernating, if you will. He could only come out in when it's extremely cold as opposed to when it's warm. But, you know, a little bit of lead up there, a little bit of action there. And then I didn't want to do the reveal about the giant too early either. And I wanted to have a little bit of, I wanted people kind of trying to figure out, you know, what's going on here, what's, you know, what's happening, what happened with Paavo, the first guy who was a victim. So that was, I wanted to throw some things out there that, you know, it's possibilities for readers to entertain, like with the Thunderbird or a rogue bear or pack wolves. You know, we have certainly have wolves up there, but yeah, that once the giant smashed the top of the lighthouse, you know, it kind of took away a little bit of the question there. But I'll just stop at this point and ask if anyone has any questions so far.
I have a comment. I'm not a big fan of thrillers, but yours was different because your characters were so real in the development of it. And the way that you kept us wondering, what is this? What's happening? It was really, really well done.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Okay. Matt, let me just ask, did you draw from a specific mythology, like Norse mythology, for the background of the giants? Or where did that come from?
Yeah, I did draw a little bit on Norse mythology there, even for people who were a little more familiar with it, might have gotten the clue from Jotnar's Tavern, the name Jotnar's Tavern. But yeah, that's kind of where I pulled from. And I deliberately drew from that because of the petroglyph of the Viking ship above the cave, and then ultimately the warning. So the Vikings knew about this creature in there and were like, you just need to run because this, we don't know how to deal with this creature. And it kind of fits into their mythology. So that is where I kind of drew that from. So yeah, seeing Odin's eye, I was like, oh yeah, it's Odin.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of Norse mythology lately, too.
Oh, yeah.
I have one question, and I don't know if you can answer it, but one thing that I really liked about the book was, to me, how did you do this? Maybe you don't even know how you did it. It went faster and faster. Like, it was like a horror movie, you know what I mean? That starts off kind of really slow, and, you know, how did you get that pace to kind of... like funnel accelerate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's definitely intentional. And honestly, my biggest fear with The Biting Cold was that it went a little too slow early on. And so I wanted to try to, because I'm not Stephen King, and Stephen King can go on for hundreds of pages like that. And you stick with him because he does it so well. But I wanted to get people kind of vested in the characters, kind of understand the characters a little bit, but, you know, still have the conflict in there. And once the action started to happen, that's when I was like, I envisioned it like going up the roller coaster. You're going up. You start to crest, and then once you start going down, it just starts to really rush, and you just, from then on, you're just flying. And that's kind of what I was shooting for with this one, because once I had you that far, I wanted you to enjoy the ride. And so it was going to be a fast, wild ride.
Yeah, I just think you did it. I don't know how you did. I mean, was it like, as you were writing it, would you work like, I mean, how, just making the sentences shorter, making the action quicker, like, were those choices that you tried to make?
I definitely, there was less.
Reading it so fast, I don't know what you're doing, because it was good.
there was less time between the action. Okay. And even when there wasn't action, there was enough conflict that it felt like there was some action happening during the lulls, if you will. So that's, but really shrinking that amount of time between when this, wow, holy cow, this just happened, and then transitioning to, wow, that just happened. And part of that may have been kind of organic in that as the giant started to regain strength, when he was starting to eat, he was becoming more and more active and stronger and more powerful and going out and seeking more victims. So if you think that, you know, coming out of hibernation, if you will, kind of lethargic, kind of like getting up in the morning, you know, you're stiff and sore, you stand up and you're like, start walking around a little bit, get the cup of coffee in you, you know, maybe a bagel or some cream of wheat or something. And then pretty soon you're starting to truck around again, you know, pretty soon you're up to full energy. And that's similar to what the giant, or I envisioned the giant to be going through. So that helped to speed up the action as well.
Well, you did a great job there.
Well, thank you.
Anybody else have any questions or comments? I'm kind of looking behind me. Okay, we got one here. On her.
Can you hear me over there? From here?
Can you hear her?
Not quite.
Okay, louder.
Why? But
here she comes. Closer to the computer.
But it just seems like it's been quite a while since I've been to Copper Harbor. But then it seems like as soon as you start reading the book, you can put yourself right exactly in the place and know where the road is. I told you. And it was just, it kind of brought everything else back. That was, I just, the descriptions of the words I thought were so accurate, you know, as to the place and everything. It was nice because it was just, I knew where everything was. I knew where the tavern was. I knew where the road was and where the bluff or the cliff was and, yep. And the water and the frozen water. So that was, yeah.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, I tried to do that. The description I had may have left a little bit open for interpretation for someone who wasn't familiar with the area. And I did.
But somebody who was familiar with the area, that was, you know.
Yeah. and I wanted people who were familiar with Copper Harbor to kind of go, oh, I know what he's talking about. I know exactly where that is. And I will say that I moved the petroglyph from where it actually is in reality up onto Brockway Mountain up there. But and that's both for, you know, because it was above the cave and also because, well, you know, don't need to necessarily full on reveal where that is. But anyway, let's see. So as I mentioned before, because I wanted to create the crucible, there were some things I had to deal with plows, with communications, even with just someone jumping on a snowmobile and riding out of Dodge, because the last time the creature attacked, there weren't snowmobiles. There wasn't this communication. So it was much easier to see how the whole village could be threatened and no one know about it. So that's a little challenging. The technology is kind of a bear, but I started to get into some of that with the very early on with Brandon complaining about the cell service. I can't do anything, can't communicate with my friends, blah, blah, blah. But then the cell tower having been knocked over, and the giant knocked it over. I didn't really go into that detail. But when the plow was coming north, it ultimately got to that tower and he wasn't going any further. And so the giant, to some degree, did block the roads so that the vehicles couldn't get through. But I also had to show that he could move around so quickly that you couldn't escape from him. And for any of you who've been up there, those woods are tight. I would not want to try to drive a snowmobile through those woods because the trees are so tightly packed together. You wouldn't be able to, especially in deep, fresh snow, you wouldn't be going anywhere fast. So you'd have to stick to the trails or jump out on the ice. Well, then that question came up too, how do we keep them from going on the ice? Because like the characters came up with that as an idea. Well, it's zip out on the ice and, go screaming down the ice down to Eagle Harbor. Well, can't do that if the ice is broken. And because it's a giant, it's not just a mindless, mindless creature. It's something that's intelligent and can anticipate and can do things to thwart its prey. And that's precisely what I had to do by breaking the ice. So, but yeah, it was challenging because I'm like, okay, this thing has to be really tough. It has to be killable, but there has to be a reason why, back in the 1800s, they couldn't figure out a way to kill it, or they couldn't kill it with, their firearms and what have you. And I wanted to give our intrepid heroes some fake hope with the fire thing, which seemed like a logical explanation to take down an ice giant, if you will. Fire, that seems like it would work great. And I had to figure out why that wasn't going to work. So that was a challenge. And then I had to figure out, well, if fire's not going to work, what is going to work? Now, here's a little reveal. I'm a brewer. I'm a home brewer. I'm real tight with a lot of the brewers in Marquette. and so I'm familiar with the brewing process. And Monty, the big brewer up in Copper Harbor, is modeled off a little bit after someone I know. And the hot liquor tanks in a brewery, that's hot water. You don't want to touch it. You don't even want to touch the tank. But that kind of, I don't know, really, honestly, I don't know where that even came from, that thought of the hot water. And it was, a lot of times this happens as I'm writing, where I'm going along and the giant's attacking Jotnar's tavern and is taking out the proprietors, and Mutti the brewer is there, and just by accident, because he has literally nothing left that he can think of, sprays him with hot water and gets quite the reaction. And then I was like, okay, yeah. And it was funny because one of my early readers said, just as I was leading up to that, he thought of it and saw that coming. with the hot water, and didn't really see the whole kind of the squirt gun nature of the attack that would follow. But and that was something again that I devised just because I kegged my own beer at home, and you use a different type of keg for that, like the ones they used in the book. So a lot of this stuff came out of experience, and a lot of the characters were inspired by real people. And then, of course, taking a lot of different characteristics of people that you see just walking around, like Mutti, the brewer, drinking the energy drinks all the time. You know, there are kids that are young folks who are constantly pounding these energy drinks. And so I wanted to catch some of that generational normalcy, if you will, and weave it in. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. The Jeff Jansen, the kind of evil, because it's just not enough to have this monster ravaging town. You got to have kind of the scumbag who's just watching out for himself. And that was Jeff. And he was clearly revealed himself to be greedy to the point where he would throw Brandon off the back of his snowmobile as bait, if you will, so he could get away. But of course, that has to backfire. The other thing that I did, or tried to do, was a little foreshadowing in that Trill was teaching Brandon some survival skills, some things about being in the forest in the wintertime that he would need later in the story. That's how he kind of ended up zeroing in on where the cave was just at the nick of time. And when he fell through the snow covering the entrance, that is also based on reality. I've deer hunted since I've been a young man, and would go out with my father deer hunting, and we would deer hunt down in Wisconsin. I deer hunt up in the UP now, but for the longest time we hunted down in Wisconsin, and we knew those woods so incredibly good that we took some friends of ours from Ohio out cross country skiing up there, and we were skiing around, and the father asked, how do you know where you are out here? And my dad said, well, we just, you know, you recognize stuff and you look for landmarks, you know, like the big oak over here. And he goes, that's literally what we call the big oak. You say the big oak and we all know exactly where you are. And you know, there's things like that in the woods that you give names, but you see it, you recognize it, and you become very familiar with it. Well, we had brought a .22 rifle just for plinking and so forth, and we're skiing along, and my dad said, well, maybe we can find something to shoot at here. And my brother said, I think there's an oil can over here on the hill. And I was like, oh yeah, there is. And we went over and kicked through the snow for about 25 seconds and clank, yep, here it is, pulled it up. They were amazing. Like, you knew there was an oil can buried in the snow over there just because you're out here all the time. And and that's the kind of thing when you're out in the woods, like the character Trillium was, very familiar with the woods, very familiar with surviving outside, trying to impart some of that to Brandon. And he needed it then to basically escape the giant. So, but with any horror type novel, you know, you got to lose people. And that's never fun picking out, you know, let's see, who am I going to rub out here? especially given that I'm kind of a happy ending guy. I like, you know, I like the endings to be satisfying. Yeah, like, woof, they made it, they survived. But yet it does have to be tinged with a bit of reality, if you will, in order to make it, you know, the horror story that it is. But so yeah, okay, and I'll pause here again for any questions.
Any questions here?
I'll just comment and say that your world building was absolutely excellent. And you needed to start slowly and gradually rev up the pace as you did. I think I'm looking at our group here and I'm thinking we were probably many of us raised in the UP and have been in the area and up the Keweenaw. So yes, we could picture it, but I think for someone who had never ever been in the Upper Peninsula, they would be able to get into the story too, because you did this world building that also gave a very good character for people to latch onto, the 15-year-old boy who did not have the wilderness experience, who did not have the world, a world of the woods in their background. I think probably, you know, for me, my dad took us out when we were very small, taught us how to walk in the woods, so we did not make noise. So that how to find mushrooms, how to, that were edible and not leave alone those were. And all the different things that is just part of a Uber's life, it just seems the most natural thing in the world. You did this in this book through this boy and through Trill, teaching him, and allowed your readers who are not Upers or not from the Northwoods areas of Canada and the United States to catch up and not feel left behind. And I think that is one of the geniuses of this novel that I truly appreciate and think, and it makes me as a writer think, okay, am I doing this? Wait a minute. have I done this too? And so thank you for that. I think it was excellent. It added to the book, and which I enjoyed thoroughly. And I also want to shoot an apology about last month. I so wanted to come and be part of the discussion about Father Marquette's graves, but we had a family conflict that I could not resolve. Wow, that was wonderful. And I learned so much, and I love archaeology, and I love how there were so many dead end trails that people followed. And this is a great, great selection of books. I'm excited to be part of the discussions. Now I'll shut up. So thank you.
Thank you very much for that comment. That was one thing that I wanted to make sure that I tried to describe things so that city folk would get it to some degree, and maybe even go, wow, really, that's a thing? Because I don't think they realize it. I've lived in cities all over the place, and yeah, they don't realize how comfortable people can be in the middle of the woods. I mean, it would blow their mind to think that, yeah, go ahead and drop me anywhere in the woods and I'll find my way out. So that they would just be like, woo, you know, and you know, how are you going to survive? We're going to die. But I wanted to try to get across to them, you know, you've got Brandon, who's not experienced in the woods, and Trill, who is experienced in the woods. And I wanted to compare and contrast those things so that people would see that, okay, yeah, there is something there that we don't understand because we've not lived it. Just like a lot of folks who grow up in, you know, the UP don't understand the craziness of the big cities with the traffic and just, you know, the crowds and crowds of people. So, yeah, well, thank you for your comments. I appreciate those. Mm-hmm.
And Matt, if I can just add on to that, I'll say it. I was embarrassed to know, not to know that a snowmobile can get stuck in the snow. That was eye-opening.
We've got some comments over here from our room.
All right.
Okay. What's
up? I just had a couple comments. And one is I truly enjoyed the slowness at the beginning of the book, almost more than the finish of the book, to be honest. I really felt that I knew all those characters quite well. And I really enjoyed meeting those people through your book and kind of the fictitious part of the giant kind of was so different. Got into it later, it was like, at first I was thinking this is really, it could happen. And now all of a sudden there's this Bigfoot kind of guy I kept envisioning as that. And the other comment I have is, I'm glad that you took care of the giant at the end of the book, because as I was reading that book, my wife was actually up at Mount Bohemia skiing and staying up there for a few years. And I had visions of me having to go up there and try to help her take down the giant. it was a good time to be reading the book, and I'm not a huge reader. I'm trying to be a good reader, and I like reading books about the UP, and I really, really enjoyed your book, so thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
That kind of leads into one thing I wanted to just ask quickly. Can you tell us, no, you have another book, and are you working on anything now? Or you want to tell us about what else you've got out there for us to enjoy?
Sure. The first thing y'all might be interested in is The Hawthorne Blow, which is, it's a novella, so it's like 110 pages, relatively short. That's a ghost ship story that takes place in Houghton. And kind of like before, I take some historic facts, kind of mold them into the region. The descriptions of the places you'll definitely recognize. Again, there's a couple of young characters, a couple of middle-aged characters in it. But that's, I've got that out there. My first novel, Solomon Seal, that's a little more that one is about like demons, possessions, and basically where that came from was that's an interesting, I used to set up trail cams a lot behind my house. And one time I was checking the trail cam and there was just this weird, I was like, what was that? It's kind of like, it almost looked like a cougar, but, and not in the UP, this was out in New York. And I'm like, what in the world was that? And that got me thinking, what if someone saw something on a trail cam, you know, that was creepy. So I wrote a short story about something that spun into the novel, and basically what they saw on the trail cam was a demon come into physical form, not like the spiritual form. And that's a whole different animal, that story. But the what I'm kind of looking at now and working on, and I haven't had near the time I wanted to work on it, but it's, I kind of started writing it, have it conceptualized as more of a science fiction. Okay, science fiction horror comedy. So this set in Marquette. And the reason it went that route is because when I started writing it, there were a couple characters that for the life of me, I just couldn't not write them funny. I was like, this just lends itself too well to just lighthearted goofiness. So that novel will be, it's kind of dealing with UFOs, if you will, and some aliens and the Men in Black and all this stuff. But it's going to have a seriously bad event happening, or is something that's going on that's not good at all. But it's going to be dealt with in a little bit of a lighter manner, simply because, like I said, I couldn't see my way to not write it funny. And part of my history, I did stand-up comedy for a while back when I was in college and after college, in improv comedy. And so it was too rich. I couldn't pass it up. So it'll be a little while before that's done. But because I'm out in Washington, D.C. right now, but I get to go home very soon. I'm very excited to get back to the Upper Peninsula. And once I get back there and things are a little more relaxed, I hope I can start writing again. But yeah, so that's kind of, the biting cold I found out just recently is now going to be available in hardcover. The publisher's putting it on hardcover, and they just released it as an audiobook as well. And I got to tell you, and you're gonna laugh, because they reached out and like, hey, we need some help with some of these pronunciations, and they asked like with Paavo and Matti and some of the Finnish pronunciations. The one pronunciation they didn't ask me about, and I didn't even think I needed to say anything about, Houghton.
Oh no.
Yeah. Awesome. So they say Houghton.
Yep, we've been into that before, because the book, the one, Women of the Copper Country, when you listen to it on audio, what they said Houghton wrong too. Yeah. And of course, pasties. They said both of those wrong.
Okay. Yep, so yeah, anyways, I was glad they were asking about a bunch of these, how to pronounce a bunch of these words, but I didn't even think of Houghton. And I should have too, because my in-laws were from Albany, New York, constantly say Houghton. I'm like, no, it's Houghton. And sauna too, sauna. No. You say, how do you say sauerkraut? Do you say sauerkraut or do you say sauerkraut? It's sauna. So.
Oh, any other questions out there?
Well, no, but I.
Yeah. Vicki, you've inspired me. I'm going to come back to the UP. The plans fell apart last September, as Evelyn might know. We're coming in May, and I'm hoping to be in Crystal Falls on May 2nd, but
yay.
I'm going to go up into Keweenaw because I've only been there once. And you can call me a troll because I lived in the Lower Peninsula for 19 years in Tawa City.
Okay, so, nice.
We're in Montana now, yeah. So I've kind of been through the extremes. Unfortunately, we're in the fastest growing town in Montana. So it's not like we were hoping for.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, I have something to say. Can you hear me?
Yep,
we can.
I'm sorry I'm late. I'm in Arizona, so I'm 3 hours behind you, but I thoroughly enjoyed your book. It kind of set the tension like the Jaws movie. And wondering what was going to happen. I really enjoyed it. And it was like a, one day read, please. It was so much fun. And I could definitely see it being made into a movie.
Oh,
that's what I was going to say.
that would be outstanding.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah.
I vote for your new book.
Yeah.
Three aspects to go for a movie. That's the one I would pitch.
Well, so I'll be talking to you, through email, but I email slow now, kind of with one hand, but about how we can pick up those old books, because I'd like to get copies of those for our library.
Okay.
And, what's the best way? Is it Amazon or through you directly?
What's the book distributor? I just lost it. Well,
I won't tell them you forgot.
Yeah. You could get it directly from the publisher as well, which is Beacon Publishing Group. Okay. And I can send you the link. What is the doggone? Because a lot of the bookstores around use. It's right there, but I can't.
Ingram,
there you go.
Yeah. Yep. Mine are on that too.
Yep.
Great. Yeah. Well, any other comments, questions, concerns?
I like your Packers shirt.
Likes your Packers shirt. Yeah.
The Packers.
Yep.
Back.
Well, and I like talking to you. I mean, it was really a good, that's, you know, kind of how the reason why we're all here tonight is because of horror. So I don't know if you're aware, I know Victor's heard this story a few times, but there's a program through the Horror Writers Association of America called Summer Scares. And I got in on it the second year they did it. And they pick out 9 horror books, 3 for middle school, 3 for high school, 3 for adult. And you can Zoom with the authors, you know, and they're very good about it. And we've been doing it here at the library for years. And my adult group that first year said, we don't want this to end. We like talking to the authors. Can't we do this all the time? And then I saw this clipping in a newspaper about the first ever UP Notable Books. And I cut it out and I had it in my purse for a while. And then I called Victor and I'm like, hey, you don't know me, but we're about to be best friends. And here we are. Well, so it is neat. I mean, you know, when you get to talk to the author, it's such a nice experience. It kind of closes the whole gap. And it was really neat talking to you tonight. We always appreciate these talks.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And yeah, for those who are out there who, you know, horror is kind of something they won't even look at. I would definitely recommend Stephen King. He's a great horror writer. And what's funny about it is most of his stuff, I would describe it more like the Twilight Zone as opposed to horror. Because so much of it, he doesn't get super gory. He's so amazing the way he writes his characters. It's unbelievable the things he can do with the written word. Sometime, you know, pick up one of his and check it out. Maybe Skeleton Crew, which is a collection of short stories of his, just so you can see how talented a writer he is. There's so many talented writers out there, and for the longest time I never would have picked up a horror book, but I picked up one of his and it was Skeleton Crew. I thought I was grabbing a novel. I just grabbed it and I went, wait a minute, this is short stories. But the first story in there was The Mist, and after that I was hooked. I'm like, wow, this guy, that is an incredible story. So,
and Night Shift.
Yep.
First book of short stories is very good too.
Yep.
Yep. So thank you so much for talking to us. One more comment.
I would recommend The Long Walk. Stephen King, The Long Walk.
Have not read that yet.
Oh my gosh. This is a book that there's no weirdness to it. This could actually happen in the right place.
Yeah.
It's good, and it's not a real long novel. I want to say maybe a couple hundred pages.
Oh, okay.
The Long Walk. It's really very good. Happens in Maine. So.
Oh, yep.
Okay. Well, thank you guys, and we're going to see you all next month for Odin's Eye. So, and Matthew, finish that comedy, sci-fi, horror. What was that? We want to read that one.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Good night, everyone.
You've been watching the UP Notable Books Club, brought to you by the Upper Peninsula Publisher and Authors Association. To join or for more information, please visit us at www.upa.org or www.upnotable.com.